This is Fresh Air. I'm Neil Conan, in for Terry Gross. The political picture could not be any stranger. 2 days after the election, we still don't know the winner of the presidential race. Stranger still is that the decisive tally will come from Florida, where the chief executive is the brother of one of the candidates. Former secretaries of state lead the legions of lawyers both camps have dispatched to Tallahassee. And at this point, it's unclear exactly when and how all of this is going to be resolved. S.V. Date is in perfect position to observe this drama. He's the Tallahassee bureau chief of the Palm Beach Post and a novelist. His latest book is Smokeout, a comedic thriller about Florida politics and the tobacco lobby, a story that until Tuesday night seemed pretty hard to top. Earlier today, I asked him to tell us more about the area at the heart of the current controversy.
Palm Beach County is it's diverse. I mean, we're a large county, one of the largest, certainly in South Florida, we're easily the biggest one. But in terms of our main population centers, the southern part of our county is very much like Broward County. A lot of elderly people, a lot of elderly Jewish people who live in these condominiums, and they have their polling places right there, and it's a Democratic stronghold. When Governor Lawton Childs ran in 1994, it was South Florida. It was Palm Beach, Dade, and Broward counties that pulled him through. I mean, were it not for those counties, he would have lost by several hundred thousand votes. Same thing again the other night. Perhaps people from the other parts of the country were looking in and saying, you know, well, Gore's down 150,000 votes with 80% counted, 85% counted. There's no way he's going to pull it out. Well, yeah, he is. You have to count Broward and Dade and Palm Beach, and those are going to be going to for Gore 67, 70, 75%. Sure enough, that's what happened. Now, what's interesting is Broward County voted for Buchanan at a rate of 0.14%. Mm-hmm. Statewide, Buchanan got 0.29% of the vote. In Palm Beach County, Buchanan got 0.79% of the vote, and there's just absolutely no explaining that whatsoever. You're not going to find a lot of support for Pat Buchanan and his ideas in an elderly retirement community made up of primarily Jewish people. It's not going to happen. And yet, there were his strong support. Clearly, this is a mistake. This is not what they wanted to do when they went into that ballot booth.
There's still a question whether "oops, I did it wrong" is grounds for reversing an election, though.
That's certainly true. You know, the instructions were there. If you read them carefully, you would see that you have to follow the arrow from the name to the hole, and you press the hole. Now, in elections past, we didn't face this issue because you never had 10 parties or 10 tickets running for president in Florida. We recently, in 1998, we had a constitutional amendment that was approved by the voters, which changed the ballot access laws. It became much easier for a minor party to get on the ballot. So this year, for the first time, we had 10 tickets. And because of that, the election supervisors around the state were faced with the dilemma of, okay, how do we do this? We can keep it clean and simple by listing all 10 names in a row, or we can try to make it large type, user-friendly, and spread them over two pages. Palm Beach County was the only county, as far as I know, that did the latter. We used larger print, but then we had a confusing system where you really had to follow the arrow from the name to the proper hole. Now, I can understand the rationale of somebody thinking, well, I don't know if I got the card in here properly. Perhaps I should count holes to make sure. And when you count holes, you get it wrong. And that seems to, I mean, it's just not my theorizing. This is what people who've called in by the hundreds have said they did.
Those people who were involved in the situation where they think they may have voted incorrectly for Pat Buchanan instead of the candidate they wanted to vote for, there are apparently some of them who say that they wanted to change their ballot while they were in the polling place, but were not permitted to do so.
Well, my understanding is that they should have been allowed to do so. I believe that in these situations where you have a immutable ballot, in the sense that once you mark it or once you poke a hole in it, it forever alters that piece of paper. My understanding is that you should be given an opportunity to start afresh at least twice. I believe it's three times, but at least twice after your first try. You know, We were getting dozens of these phone calls the very afternoon that it was happening in real time. So this is, I mean, what I hope to give the impression here is that we had an indication that there were serious problems the day that it was going on, mm-hmm. when we didn't know, when we had no idea what the result was going to be, and that it was going to hinge entirely upon those votes. In fact, the reason that it became such a huge story for us, some of our editors made these mistakes and realized that if they were doing it, probably others were. And we wrote that story that very day, that there were some serious issues with the balloting in Palm Beach County.
We are familiar with stories, going back certainly to the 1960 election, of irregularities in places like Illinois and Chicago and Cook County. Is there a history of voter, shenanigans in the state of Florida?
Well, let's put it this way. As late as 1997, we had to throw out an entire mayoral race in the city of Miami because invented people, dead people, people who've lived nowhere near Miami, somehow were voting in that election. And it was not a one or two or three thing. That led to some changes in the absentee ballot rules and so forth in the next legislative session. But, you know, the funny thing is, usually the types of irregularities, apart from the Palm Beach issue, those are large numbers there. But typically when people complain about, oh, I was intimidated from going to the polls, or they didn't let me vote even though I was registered, we're talking an extremely small number of people spread over an entire state. And usually the final tally is so conclusive in its result. The numbers are so far apart between candidates that even if every one of those people who were complaining about something were correct, it wouldn't make a difference. Here, literally, every vote is making a difference. That's the difference.
The governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, was, a lot of people think, and you've certainly written, was originally the son of the Bush family who was expected to run for president. How did it work out that we got George W.?
I think a lot of people are wondering that. I think if it happens that Gore ends up winning this, many more people are going to be wondering that. Look at their histories. Jeb Bush whizzed through college in 2.5 years. He then went and became a banker in Venezuela, lived overseas for a time, came back to work on his dad's campaign. He's been working hard all his life. He brings these habits with him to Tallahassee. He's a workaholic. Now, you know, like his policies, dislike his policies, whatever, you cannot say that he's not a articulate, smart, extremely hardworking individual. Now, we in Florida don't know George W. Bush terribly well. We've seen him for the last few months. And frankly, when the two are on stage together at the same time, the comparison is very obvious and the distinction is very clear. And so we have a situation where we have Jeb Bush, who we did elect to governor. Now, keep in mind, Florida, we have a relatively weak governor, and we were still a little bit, not nervous, but maybe had some potential misgivings about electing Jeb, who'd never had elected office before, to the highest job in the state. Now, here he is, who's a guy who's obviously more capable than his brother, and he's asking us to make his brother the leader of the free world. That's something. That's a bit much to ask, and obviously some people said no, which is why the election's as close as it is. Everyone expected in the Republican Party that Jeb would solidly lock down Florida and deliver it without much of a fight at all. You know, the fact that we're counting votes 2 days after the election, you know, that didn't happen.
Is Jeb Bush a successful governor of Florida? I mean, you would think that if he was doing well and popular there, obviously popular enough to get elected, that it would be a cakewalk for him to shepherd his brother through to a presidential victory.
That was the theory. Jeb Bush's approval ratings are extremely high. Most people who disagree with his policies still find him agreeable. At times, he can be a bit imperious, I guess. He's rubbed the legislature the wrong way many a time. But it didn't happen that his popularity rubbed off on his brother, and I think that goes back to the comparisons that are made. Jeb Bush will work until the late night hours understanding a problem. I've sent emails to him regarding stories I'm writing, and he sometimes answers back at 10 or 10:30 at night, or as early as 6:30 in the morning. George Bush, by all accounts, doesn't like to keep those kind of work schedules. And you can love your brother and do all you can for him, but at the end of the day, your brother's got to do stuff for himself. And I think that's what's happened in Florida.
Is there a sibling rivalry?
Oh, there must be. Jeb Bush is extremely competitive. He's known to play golf on Sunday afternoons, and he means to win, regardless of who he's playing with. And it's kind of a power golf where he briskly walks around the course, and it doesn't take him too terribly long. He wants to play well, and he wants to beat whoever he's playing with. I can't imagine that there was that kind of competitiveness was not there between the brothers. Obviously, you know, we weren't there when they were growing up. Mm-hmm. But, I think of the day when George W. must have announced to his brother that he was going to run for president, and what Jeb's reaction must have been. He must have kind of suck it all up and put out his hand and give him a hug and say, you know, I'm gonna make it happen for you, and I'm gonna deliver Florida and so forth. And you got to wonder, in the deepest recesses of his mind, he must know that if his brother runs for president, he probably may never get the opportunity to do so at that point. And yet, what do you say when your brother wants to do something that's ambitious and a dream of many people? You obviously have to support him. I mean, Jeb Bush is in a very tough position here, personally and professionally.
My guest is reporter and novelist S.V. Sharish Date. He's the Tallahassee bureau chief of the Palm Beach Post. His latest novel is Smokeout. We'll be back in a moment. This is Fresh Air. I'm talking with Sharish Date of the Palm Beach Post. His latest novel is Smokeout. This book is, as they say, loosely based on a real incident, a real story in the state of Florida when Lawton Childs got a bill through the state legislature that made it easier to sue tobacco companies.
Right. What happened was in 1994, Governor Childs succeeded in sneaking through. And that's how the Florida legislature works, by the way, for those of you unfamiliar with it. Most of the things that we come to read about as being very bad laws or very dramatic laws are snuck through. People don't talk about them in the open. They're usually little amendments, little changes to existing laws that have dramatic results. What happened in 94 was Childs was able to sneak through in the closing hours of the legislative session a bill that basically made it very, very easy for him to sue Big Tobacco. Now, when Tobacco figured this out within days, they got extremely upset. In 1995, the legislature, repealed that law. Governor Childs vetoed that repeal. So it came back in 1996 with the legislature about to override Governor Childs' veto, if you follow that. Mm-hmm. So at that point, now the legislature needs 2/3 vote in each chamber in order to do what tobacco wanted. They had the votes in the House, no problem. The Senate was going to be close. Everybody knew it. It was going to be 27 votes. One of those votes was a woman named Jenny Brown Waite. She's a state senator from the western part of Florida, Crystal River. And she'd always voted with tobacco on the argument that, you know, no one makes you smoke. If you want to quit, you can quit. And it's an individual decision. Tobacco ought not be held accountable for your own flaws. Childs did an interesting thing. He was able to provide her with some documents, with some material that his trial team by this point had already found regarding tobacco and what they'd done over the years and the tactics they'd used and so forth. And he knew that Senator Brown Waite was a very likely, very receptive person to get this material. Her father, her mother, and her younger sister had passed away from smoking-related diseases. She says later now, she stayed up all night. She couldn't sleep that night reading the stuff and trying to decide what to do. And she gave a dramatic, emotional speech to a silent Senate chamber the next day and said, you know, I can't play the tobacco game any longer. This has gone on too long, and I'm going to vote to sustain the veto. So it was that they lost by one vote. Now, rarely in real life does an entire issue, does a whole giant story like that boil down and crystallize itself in a single moment. And it did in Florida on the Senate floor in March of 1996. And at that time, I thought, whoa, this is huge. If this stands, this will be enormous in years to come. And sure enough, it has. We had a settlement in Florida, $13 billion in a year and a half. And then just recently, we had a verdict in Miami, which is not a structured settlement. We had jurors who got so tired of tobacco and what they'd been doing over the years that said, you know, pay up, $145 billion. We want it now. We want to see it. So I think it's very, very plausible that none of this happens. None of it, had it not been for that one vote in Florida. That's just, to me, just amazing. I mean, in years to come, people will write history and look at that. I didn't want to write history. I wanted to take that moment and kind of play with it and use it to get into how Tallahassee works.
Describing how Tallahassee works and the interaction between senators, state senators, and lobbyists. State senators in Florida, in your novel, and I assume this is correct, you say they make $25,000 a year?
That's right. We have what we like to call a citizen legislature, in which folks are expected to have regular average jobs, or not average, as the case may be, and then come up to Tallahassee for 2 months and discuss the issues of the day and then go home and resume their everyday lives. Now, way too often this does not happen. They become essentially professional politicians. They spend the better part of their day, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, to deal with constituents and so forth. But because there are institutional reasons why they don't want to give themselves a pay raise, certainly, and they don't really want to make themselves a professional legislature either, what ends up happening is for far too many, they rely almost exclusively on the lobbyists and the staff for most of their decision-making, for most of their knowledge about issues. Now, another part of this is some people, after they get elected to the legislature, figure out a way to make themselves rich merely by being in the legislature. And I can't tell you how many legislators have consultancy jobs. And what they do is they consult with local governments, presumably about their expertise in governmental affairs. Well, in some cases, we have chairs of appropriations committees. And they're going around and talking to local governments and planning boards and whatnot and offering their expertise when everyone knows darn well that the expertise they're offering is that, hey, I'm chair of the committee that handles $45 billion a year, and if you want something for your little hometown, then you ought to do what my client wants here at the local level. Yeah, that's absurd. That is absurd that we're basically selling access to these people for no other reason that they're in the state legislature.
And these decisive bills often come down to just a word or two in a rider, an amendment.
Absolutely. And again, the amendments are written by the lobbyists. It's stunning. I mean, if people saw how things work up here, they would be appalled. Who is it? Kaiser Wilhelm, I guess, said there are two things in life you don't want to be seen being made, is sausage and legislation. Well, the legislation might even be worse here in Tallahassee. Especially toward the end of session when things are frenzied, you have we have a large open area between the two legislative chambers. It's called the Rotunda. It is packed with lobbyists. And what they do is they send in notes to the legislators to ask them to come out for a moment. The legislator comes out, the lobbyist hands him an amendment, and the little legislator goes back in and introduces it. And that's how it works. And you can have major dramatic changes to bills for these handwritten notes that are given to the lawmakers by people who are paid by interest groups to do these things. We had a bill that was supposed to honor a Florida State trooper who was killed in the line of duty, and it made some changes to the drunk driving laws to make it more difficult for people to get away with vehicular manslaughter, something to that effect. And the bail bondsman lobby was able to change it basically to enrich themselves, to add a word here and a word there. Governor Bush ended up vetoing it because it was so outrageous. Now, these are the sort of things that happen, and unfortunately, the one, though, that I just described, that's one of the few that we actually find out about.
You've set one of your books, it was a murder mystery, a thriller, at NASA, and that was called Final Orbit. Then Speed Week was about Daytona. Again, murder played a prominent role in that. And the The threat of death certainly lingers around your most recent book, Smokeout. After NASA, after Daytona, and now Tallahassee, what's next?
Yeah, I guess I got to keep moving on to new beats to find new things to write about in my fiction. What's next is Central Florida. I used to work for the Orlando Sentinel in Orlando, and it's amazing how much influence the theme park industries down there have over not just Central Florida, but all of Florida. I mean, Walt Disney World, for an example, has its own special law in Florida. It's essentially allowed to govern itself on its land. It was given this right in the mid-60s by the Florida legislature. If they wanted, they could build their own nuclear power plant or airport on Disney property, you know, without anyone's having to question them about it. You know, obviously a situation like that offers a little bit of opportunity to have fun with it, especially if things start going awry on a fictional Central Florida theme park's property, and they are in charge of investigating and regulating it.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
S.V. Date is Tallahassee Bureau Chief of the Palm Beach Post. His latest novel is Smokeout. I'm Neil Conan, and this is Fresh Air.